y convergencia. Durante su discurso inaugural, Cue Monteagudo dijo que no actuará buscando venganzas o creando culpables, pero advirtió que quienes hayan violado los derechos humanos de los oaxaqueños serán sancionados. También anunció la creación de una fiscalía que investigará la represión contra maestros y la ciudadanía oaxaqueña en el 2006 y prometió que no se usará el poder para extinguir movimientos sociales. El nuevo gobernador envió a la legislatura del estado una reforma política que incluye la revocación del mandato para el Ejecutivo Estatal cuando se compruebe el uso pernicioso de sus facultades. Dijo que nunca más se tolerará un gobernador que abuse del poder público para beneficio personal o interés de un grupo en detrimento de la población. Nuestro compañero Emilio Santiago de Radio Calenda, Oaxaca, explica las expectativas que tiene la ciudadanía oaxaqueña con el cambio de gobierno.
Las expectativas que se tiene de manera generalizada, mucha gente tiene puesta su ilusión, sus esperanzas en este nuevo gobierno, de que va a haber un cambio. La gente no tiene bien claro así qué tipo de cambio va a hacer, ya que hay distintos puntos de vista. Por ejemplo, el magisterio, la sección 22, que es un gremio muy organizado aquí en Oaxaca, pues ellos no creen que vaya a haber un cambio de fondo. En cambio, la mayoría del pueblo que no está organizado, pues ellos confían que sí, que va a haber un cambio, creen que va a haber un cambio en la justicia, en el trato que va a tener el gobierno hacia los ciudadanos, y muchas organizaciones pues tienen puestas sus esperanzas en que va a haber apoyos directamente hacia sus organizaciones, como son en proyectos, en otro tipo de inversiones para obras, por ejemplo. Pero en general yo creo que la gente tiene puestas sus esperanzas en que va a acabarse el autoritarismo y empezar una etapa de justicia principalmente.
Emilio Santiago ofrece un balance de los 80 años del gobierno autoritario del Partido Revolucionario Institucional en Oaxaca.
Todo el mundo puede ver que Oaxaca, a pesar de tener grandes recursos naturales como bosques, que es una de sus grandes riquezas, litorales, zonas arqueológicas y mucha riqueza de minerales, por ejemplo, pues el legado de esos 80 años de gobierno es la pobreza, ya que pues en diferentes rubros hay primeros lugares negativos de Oaxaca. Por ejemplo, gran cantidad de personas analfabetas, bajos niveles educativos, desnutrición, prostitución infantil, violencia últimamente. En fin, un legado nefasto, diría yo.
Era Emilio Santiago, reportero de Radio Calenda desde el estado de Oaxaca, en México. A continuación escucharemos un reporte desde Colombia sobre el temor que sufre una comunidad rural del departamento de Arauca que denunció la violación y asesinato de 3 niños a manos de militares colombianos. Las Fuerzas Armadas de ese país, acusadas de numerosas violaciones a los derechos humanos, continúan recibiendo ayuda militar de Estados Unidos bajo el pretexto de combatir al narcotráfico y a la guerrilla. Vladimir Carrillo con los detalles.
En una tumba a ras de tierra del cementerio de Tame reposan los restos de los 3 niños asesinados por el ejército colombiano. Aquí Gloria espera que el crimen de los menores, como su sepulcro, no quede en el olvido.
Me da mucho guayado con los padres de ver que perder 3 hijitos y sin saber quién irá a responder por ese delito.
12 días antes de haber sido asesinados los hermanos Torres, y en el mismo sector, esta mujer denunciaba la violación de su hija de 14 años a manos del mismo militar implicado en la muerte de los niños, quien los habría asesinado para callar la verdad.
Mataron los niños porque los niños denuncian, ellos no se callan, ellos cuentan las cosas, lo que vieron y lo que iba pasando, lo que pasaba con ellos.
Para el padre de la menor abusada por el militar, la falta de atención prestada a la denuncia permitió que el uniformado cometiera el crimen de los menores en complicidad, según él, con la tropa que comandaba.
Si los hubieran descubierto de inmediato, no hubiera sucedido esa muerte de la muerte de estos niños. Lógico, porque se le hubiera puesto de una vez remedio a la enfermedad antes de que explotara.
El denunciar el brutal crimen y sus responsables significó para esta comunidad el señalamiento del ejército colombiano. Hoy hombres, mujeres y niños le suman a su dolor el temor hacia las fuerzas militares.
El peligro que se corre en este momento de las comunidades es que tal vez por sostener la verdad puede haber algún tipo de represalia. Tenemos miedo de eso porque el ejército anda por todas partes.
Para defensores de derechos humanos, el asesinato de los menores hace parte de la crisis humanitaria que vive la región a causa del conflicto armado. Por los crímenes fueron destituidos 7 militares. Entre tanto, la comunidad que venció el miedo y denunció los asesinatos hoy exige al gobierno colombiano verdad y garantías en las investigaciones. Desde la vereda Temblador, en el departamento de Arauca, Vladimir Carrillo, Telesur, Colombia.
En México, el jefe de seguridad regional, Luis Cárdenas, reporta que Eduardo Ramírez, el supuesto jefe regional del grupo de capos conocido como los Zetas, ha sido capturado en el estado de Hidalgo. Según Cárdenas, el detenido estaba a cargo del contrabando de drogas de Panamá y la República Dominicana a los Estados Unidos. Cárdenas añadió que Ramírez es un colaborador cercano de Heriberto Lascano, el supuesto líder de los Zetas. Víctor Quintana es un activista social y catedrático universitario en el noreste mexicano.
El apresar grandes capos, sí, es muy espectacular y genera cierto apoyo de la opinión pública. Y, sin embargo, la misión principal del gobierno es reducir la violencia, reducir los delitos que están perjudicando a las personas y a las familias. Y por aquí no se ve ningún resultado.
La televisora Al Jazeera reportó recientemente que los Zetas han recibido entrenamiento militar en Estados Unidos. Las revelaciones de Al Jazeera ocurrieron poco después de que el diario La Jornada de México revelara que Edgar Valdés Villarreal, un estadounidense conocido como La Barbie, trabajó como asesino a sueldo con Joaquín El Chapo Guzmán, un renombrado capo mexicano. Quintana dice que la tan publicitada asistencia policial y financiera para supuestamente resolver el problema de la violencia en México solo puede llevar a mayor injerencia de Washington en los asuntos internos de su vecino del sur.
Yo creo que con todo esto, con todas estas cosas, que los Estados Unidos van a decir, no, pues necesitan los mexicanos más ayuda nuestra. Y esto no nos conviene definitivamente. Esto va en contra de la soberanía nacional, pero además no es efectivo.
Por su parte, SDP Noticias señala que el capo estadounidense La Barbie, arrestado recientemente en México, trabajó como principal sicario o asesino a sueldo para el líder capo Arturo Beltrán Leyva. SDP subraya que Valdés Villarreal era responsable del reclutamiento de sicarios para asesinato y decapitación de enemigos de Beltrán Leyva.
Cuando toman a un grande capo, cuando lo aprehenden, pues inmediatamente se da un reacomodo violento de fuerzas para sucederlo y se dispara otra vez la violencia.
Víctor Quintana es un activista social y catedrático universitario en el noreste mexicano. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a las radios comunitarias de Chile, a Más Voces de España, a Radio Calenda de Oaxaca en México, a la Radio de la ONU de Estados Unidos, a Telesur y a la Radio del Sur de Venezuela y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención. A los radioyentes de las emisoras que no programan el Informativo Pacífica los viernes, queremos recordarles que la edición del viernes y de todos los días de la semana pueden escucharla en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And coming up next on Free Radio, that's us. It's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, and stay tuned. You are listening to 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert North. Be with you for the next 2 hours. And if you got a phone and you're interested, you can be with me too. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Stay tuned.
Once they gave welfare to the poor, food stamps for the grocery store. But now there's work there. You know there's been a switch. The poor sweep up the streets, and welfare's for the rich. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. High-class bandits bought some banks, withdrew all the money, thanks. The SNL bailout, $1 trillion they said. It's all getting paid back with the taxes from your pay. And it's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. See those corporate hustlers go, big Pentagon portfolio. They make some payoffs and get billions back. They drive away real fast in a welfare Cadillac. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay. Don't live alone. Just one job, work fair. Don't get old, don't get sick, work fair. Leave the easy life to the slick. No free rides and no freeze. Guess they'll show those welfare cheats. Assistance vouchers make you look seedy. Forget that school lunch, kids. Lower taxes for the greedy. It's a workfare life if you're not rich. So dump that trash, shovel that dirt. Hear the congressman say, no work, no pay.
And that's sort of an oldie from the Working People's Music Tape, the Ray Corona Band, Workfare Life. Well, you know, not the most sophisticated tune, and lots of polemics, but hey, I tend to agree with them, so there you go. I'll hum along. Well, as mentioned before, the call-in number is 831-427-3772. If you have something you want to say, it's Thursday, December 2nd, 2010. We're running out of 2010 here. Our old friend Dean Adell, you remember Dean Adell? He's the kind of, one time he was a hippie doc. He was Dr. Schoenfeld in the Berkeley Barb. He's retiring from his KGO radio show, which usually goes from 1 to 2. And when I have a radio in my car, which I don't right now, I used to kind of tune in to him because he had lots of interesting stuff to say. I was reading his farewell. He's apparently going to pick up his wild and crazy life, look, check with his grandchildren, his children, of which he has many, and they'll be playing some reruns, but I'm a fan of Adell, so I thought I would tip my hat to him as he rides off into the sunset, as many of us will do, perhaps not too far distant future. So, I spent a lot of the last show, which was on Sunday. For those who don't know, I do a long show on Sunday mornings on this station, doing a kind of an impromptu interview with Ronnie Curry, who does a street ministry, which is actually sort of a burritos, beanies, sweater giveaway. She tries to support homeless and poor people on the streets with an eye, you know, to perhaps hooking them for the Lord, as you will. But she I think she also has a genuine interest in establishing a community of people who care about each other, whatever the pretext. And she was a part of the whole Calvary Episcopal Church. That's the she's not an Episcopalian, but she was kind of opening up the church to young people as a sort of a gathering place until it was cut short by, reportedly, by people like our outgoing Vice Mayor Cynthia Matthews, who owns the property next to Jack's Hamburgers across the street on Cedar and Lincoln. And Matthews didn't like the downscale look of the poor youth that hung out there, poor in fashion, perhaps rich in energy and other things. Anyway, Ronnie and I had a long talk about the current political brouhaha in the church, which still is entirely clear. There's events coming up this weekend. I believe there's a benefit for Father Joel. His last name starts with an R, I believe. Not sure. But Father Joel is being pressured by a minority of the congregation to resign because, first of all, he allowed Renee Curry to open up a coffee house there and do her thing and bring in young people and allow them to gather if they followed certain rules. And though Joel himself severely restricted Renee under pressure and eventually drove away most of the young people most of the time, he still maintained and maintains a Monday night coffee house, which is now just not for young people, but for everybody. And he is being pressed to end the coffee house, but apparently a majority of the congregation, and again, this is all secondhand report, wants to keep it. Now, what does all this have to do with the broader homeless movement and the rest of us who may not be enamored of Christian fantasies, mythologies, rituals, and abuses? Well, this is a big red church in the middle of town, which sits on a big open space a block from Pacific Avenue, perhaps one of the largest pieces of privately owned open space downtown. And it's often a place where, well, in the past, the drum circle in the 90s used to come and gather, and people would gather, and sometimes the church sextant would be tolerant, other times she or he wouldn't be. But it's a place that the community should have access to, I believe. It's downtown. It shouldn't be simply for a privileged few Episcopalians to lord it over everybody else. And now, of course, even the public spaces have become private under Vice Mayor and probable Mayor Ryan Coonerty's parking lot panic law, which makes all the parking lots, the public parking lots, which your taxpayer dollars pay for, private in the sense that you are suddenly constrained by the requirement that you either have a vehicle and park it, or have a vehicle and retrieve it, or walk directly through. And any other behavior in these parking lots is illegal. I suppose in theory you can get a permit. I haven't heard of anybody getting permits for events. I've seen people doing stuff in parking lots, upper middle class people, like the Planned Parenthood people guiding women in for abortion counseling or abortions per se, and their opponents from the pro-life people or the anti-choice people doing their protests, and the police pointedly ignoring them all, even though they're all violating Coonerty's law. Coonerty is a guy who's a lawyer, but apparently he isn't really licensed to practice law in California, as far as I know. That's what I was told by one of my attorney friends who looked up his bar card. But he does teach constitutional law classes at Cabrillo and at UCSC, and also engages in constitution crunching, so to speak, or crumbling or crumpling on the city council, where he's been sitting for a number of years now, his other hat being part of the Coonerty family that runs businesses downtown, like Next Space, and is involved with the bookshop Santa Cruz, much as he'd like to claim he isn't. I see him there quite frequently. His family runs and owns the place, and he's a part of it. In any case, spent a lot of time on the show on that one, that long interview with Renee Curry, and I, as I mentioned after the interview happened, I both regretted it and I appreciated it. And for those who want to check out her perspective on what's happening at this church, which is really sort of a microcosm of what's going on downtown, and it's also politically connected into the whole situation because Matthews is the vice mayor and a longtime in her own kind of sphere community activist. Now, I haven't called her and invited her on the show to give her perspective, and I think I probably will, although I know she'll decline. She has done interviews with me when she was mayor, when I kind of went to her office and asked. I think at one time she did an interview with me, but she's generally no fan of mine, and I'm not a fan of hers. So, I mean, there is that. But we are both, I'm in the business of recording what public officials say and critiquing it, and she is still a public official, although that will end Tuesday after next when the city council changes hands again. We get the new city council. Rutkin and Matthews are out. Coonerty is the mayor. And it looks like, I'm not sure if Hillary Bryant or Lynn Robinson are going to be vice mayor. It's not clear what's going on there. But we'll see as the gloom deepens. Anyway, I was also playing street interviews and didn't have a lot of time for those last time, and as well as other stuff that I'd announced I was going to do. My apologies to those who sat through the whole show waiting for stuff to happen. You can always call in and demand things happen. And if I'm on one line, 427-3772, the main line in, the one that I usually direct people to, you can also call the secondary line, 469-3119. For all you habitual addicted callers, 469-3119 is a number to call. And you can get my attention that way. Or you can email me, although I admit sometimes I don't notice the emails until it's far too late, at rnorse3@hotmail.com. That's rnorse3@hotmail.com. And I'm hooking up the internet right now, so I will actually be watching for any incoming stuff. So feel free to do that if you want. And in the meantime, let me turn to some of those street interviews I didn't have time for on Sunday. And I believe these. This is on Thanksgiving Day, after the Thanksgiving meal at the move from the Veterans Hall, because the Veterans Hall was abruptly and I believe improperly closed by the county to and remain closed month after month, in spite of the fact that the vets need that building, have a right to that building, and should have reoccupied that building, in my view, with community support. And I don't know what's going on now. I suppose they're behind closed doors, dickering quietly. And nothing wrong with negotiating quietly. It's just you also have to have, I think it's important to get some community pressure on the issue, too. But there was a meal instead at the Civic Auditorium where I did a lot of interviews, played them on Sunday. That's a Thanksgiving meal. And afterward, I went down to Pacific Avenue, which was largely deserted. And I ran into Philip and Barack Obama, not the president, but Barack Obama the dog. Although I must say the guy in Washington is a dog of a president, a wretched dog for what he's doing to the United States overseas, to people in Guantanamo, his support for the banks. He's just your standard sellout Democrat, and that's really too bad. But the community has to do something about that. My voice is not simply loud enough or strong enough or influential enough to change any policies, although I'm going to keep talking about it. Anyway, Philip and his dog Barack have discussed these issues with me, at least Philip has. Barack listens pensively on what the situation is with service dogs, what their rights are, what the rights are of their owners are. And here's Barack, or I should say Barack's master, talking about that. I'm kind of hung up on that dog, I guess, or maybe on that president. Can't tell which. Anyway, let's get into the interviews. And again, call in number if you're interested is 427-3772.
One thing to say is Neil here again. I think these cops need to just chill out and find better things to do than harassing the homeless. It's a big waste.
This isn't actually Philip. This is someone who kind of interjected himself into the conversation with Philip, but He's saying things that I think are quite appropriate for Thanksgiving.
Time and money, and people have to exist somehow, some way. Not everyone can afford an apartment or a car or this and that. They just need to relax and get a life and leave the homeless alone. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both.
And I'm sorry, you were saying...
Still about the service dog, you were asking
this
if anybody was doing anything. I have a meeting November 29th with the senior legal assistants here, and yes, we do intend to file a suit. I would like to comment on what the man just said before me. A lot of people may not agree with me here. If you want the police to stop harassing the homeless, elect people that will change the ordinances.
Well, that makes sense. Of course, the problem is both the Democrats and Republicans are all the same and being too gutless to even think about the issue. And all they can do is vote in worse ordinances. That's what we've gotten.
All the police do is enforce the ordinances that the people that are elected pass or you pass.
Well, that's certainly true to some extent, although police have wide discretion under this. And sometimes, well, you know, homeless people get the brunt of that discretion, I think.
If you come back on the radio as being homeless, non-taxpaying, well, taxpayers pay their salary. You going to help the guy that pays your salary, or are you going to help the guy that's just sucking?
Now, you better think about that, folks. And we've been talking with...
Philip.
Thank you, Philip. Down here in front of New Leaf, which is closing in 10 minutes, open, probably one of the few stores on Pacific Avenue that is open. Interestingly enough, a moment ago, exactly about 15 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago, but I noticed a security guard, two of them, drove up on bicycles, rode up, and directed this woman sitting in front of Borders with her dog to move, even though she was blocking nothing. The store was closed. Nobody had complained. And I got into a discussion about this with the individual whose interview you just heard. He's a vet who has a disabled dog, and he'll be dealing with issues around the exclusion of people with service dogs or the demand that they present documentation. And I think he's right on that issue. However, on this other issue, he felt that the security guards were appropriate in, you know, it wasn't really their fault. They're just doing what they're ordered to do, yada, yada, yada. We are not here because we are following orders, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't really go for that kind of discussion, particularly since on a day like today when there was clearly no complaints from anybody, that they were just running homeless people, or people, ordinary people, sitting next to buildings away because of this merchant law that the city council passed. So, we have with us, however...
And before we get on to that, yeah, the point is really, individual officers, though they are enforcing the law, and security guards, even though they claim that that's really just what they're doing, you have to examine each individual enforcement action to see what's going on, of course, but they're responsible for the actions they take, for the fear they create, for the demands they make, for the rights they take away individually. It's not the legislators. It's not their boss. It's not the merchant who makes the complaint. It's the individual officer ultimately who makes the choice as to what to do. And admittedly, you know, that can be a very hard choice. I mean, there are very few police officers who will very openly and explicitly, let's say, refuse to enforce the sleeping ban. There are a couple. There's a famous one in New York who resigned at the beginning of the millennium, about 8 or 9 years ago, and rather than arrest people under Giuliani's "Sweep the Streets Free of Homeless People" campaign. But that usually the resistance takes a different form. The police officer chooses to do something else. But I think that, and you know, that's good too. If an officer finds a way to avoid enforcing a bad law that takes away people's rights, that hurts a certain class of people. But the reality is, when somebody, however nice a guy, however pleasant his smile, however great a conversation you had with him 2 minutes before, takes an action to destroy someone's rights, to treat them as essentially less than a first-class citizen, whether that's mandated by law or not, that action has to be, I think, in conscience, verbally, vocally, if not physically, opposed by individual citizens. Now, physical opposition means, of course, you're interfering with an officer. So I think that, you know, you do that in extreme cases where officers are threatening physical abuse, or where you have enough actual support from a larger group of people to justify that, maybe documentation and so forth. You can justify that action later. The officer is, engaging in excessive force and things of that sort. But you certainly are in a position to be able to criticize it. verbally, to draw over other people, to shame the officers that are engaging in this kind of behavior, to raise your voices. At least I have thought that's important. Now, others have disagreed with me. They've said, well, you know, what good does that do? Only a small number of people see it. You're regarded as some kind of a wingnut by people passing by who don't want to get involved with the police. You know, it has more power if you, you know, and you sound strident and loud, and if later on in a court they can claim that you were the unreasonable one because you raised your voice, even though it's quite reasonable to raise your voice against unjust behavior. But, you know, you can be made to look bad by doing actually the right thing, and that certainly is true, too. So it really is a matter of personal choice. I've chosen to believe that it's really a better service, at least for me. Maybe it just suits my personality more. Maybe it's something of an ego trip. Who knows? Where I simply think if a police officer is double parking his car and jumps out to harass someone sitting on the sidewalk in front of a closed store, actually these two private security guards in this case didn't double park a squad car. They simply rode their bikes up onto the bicycle, rode over to the woman with her dog and told her to move. They didn't give her a ticket. They told her to move. But what business had they to do that? You know, had they received a complaint, or were they just on patrol, making sure that the homeless were moving along? That, to me, is kind of sickening. It really is, particularly on a holiday like that. But any day of the year, actually. So, more street interviews from Thanksgiving Day, I guess November, 24th, 25th, thereabouts.
Hey, a local resident who's been around for a while. How long have you been around for?
A couple of years, right here on Pacific.
And what is your name?
Jeff Hay.
And Jeff, you're a St. George man.
Yes, I am.
And you say you keep an eye, you have a pretty close personal contact with what goes on Pacific Avenue.
I do, yeah. I walk up and down because I come to Newley to shop a lot. And consequently, I walk through, you know, what probably a lot of people would consider a gauntlet. I don't. I consider it, you know, people who are trying to stay alive, you know. And I respect them. I think that I feel like I'm about this close to being them myself. I have no job. Haven't had a job in 5 years.
What were you doing previously?
I was a carpenter, and then I was a caretaker of an organic fruit orchard in New Zealand.
Disability now?
Or? No. I have nothing. I'm actually...
Living off your love.
Yeah. Basically, I am. From family members. It's keeping me alive. And just this week, my wife and I live at the St. George, and just this week, there's a guy who, I won't say his name, but he lives most of the time out in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz on the Front Street side.
And it's often the case that at night I have observed people in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, a couple of people, usually one regular guy who sleeps in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz every night. And that is technically a violation of the sleeping ban, but the police have never enforced it. And it's something I've mentioned on the radio before. And when I had a conversation with this caller previously, or this caller, this guy on the street that I ran into in front of New Leaf, he was worried that this might have an impact, this discussion on the radio, with police enforcement. And I really want to assure him and his partner, who care about this person, I don't think it will, but we're not going to belabor the point any further. But it's interesting. I mean, I've mentioned it in a number of contexts that the Coonerty family is very, I think privately, they're in a way a very progressively minded group at the bookshop Santa Cruz. I mean, they've had one of the few open bathrooms, generally open to the community, though not to those of us who they've chosen to exclude from the bookshop Santa Cruz for political reasons. I'm one of those. When we started protesting the elder Neil Coonerty's support of anti-homeless laws back in the early 90s, and then subsequently his son Ryan Coonerty's creation of support of new anti-homeless laws and the sleeping ban 3 or 4 years ago. In fact, the Bookshop Santa Cruz has one of three bathrooms in town that is a visitor's bathroom. You see a little sign outside the bookshop and outside the Asano coffee shop and outside Pizza My Heart the other two places, which says visitor's bathroom, which means that you can actually walk into the bathroom without being a customer, take a dump or have a piss or whatever, take a piss, and wash your hands, splash some water on your face. And it's a rather, they're all comfortable, well-maintained bathrooms. This is something that was done in Santa Barbara when I was employed as an advocate down there in the early 90s for the Legal Defense Center. We were successful in pressing the city to open up to contract with four private businesses to have bathrooms during the day available for everybody, including homeless people. And all the apprehensions of people like outgoing Mayor Mike Rodkin, who, if you've been following my show, you may have heard an interview with him that he did with us, I think it was at the beginning of last year, might have been the beginning of this year, in January, where he insisted that the reason that we don't have 24-hour bathrooms is they just get completely wrecked and destroyed and so forth. Now, visitors' bathrooms in businesses are not 24-hour bathrooms, but they are bathrooms open to the general public that aren't monitored in a direct way. You don't have somebody watching you go in and watching you go out, although, you know, there's a certain amount of, I guess, surveillance. But, you know, it's a lower level of surveillance than somebody keeping an eye on people going in and out, as they do, for example, in San Diego. They actually set up a public 24-hour bathroom that had, you have to walk past a monitoring station down there, although you weren't on television while you were inside the bathroom, as far as I knew. So there was no destruction of property and so forth. And the Coonerty family, for a long time, has, and I think privately, been a very progressive group. The problem is that when progressive people get involved in politics in Santa Cruz, they get deformed, and I think that's what happened to Neil and Ryan and as shown by the laws they supported and continue to support. It's too bad. I'm going to take a brief musical break, and then we're going to continue with street interviews. Here's another one from the Working People's Music tape.
I'm young, just in my teens. I make toys here in Thailand. The pig lady and the big ears mouse. You think this is fairyland, but the bosses are in your face. They push and yell all day. They need more toys somewhere far away. You can't live on what they pay. But we will have dignity. Tear down this misery. The world will hear our song. We're growing strong. One Monday afternoon, there were screams in the factory. The whole building consumed by flames. Doors locked for security. In that cruel cheap fire trap, 200 workers died. The broken toys and broken people strewn all over side by side. But we will have dignity. Tear down this misery. The world will hear our song. We're growing strong. And we're fighting back. Petitions and boycotts will carry us through. They'll all know this world is our world too. Across the sea's a land where the dolls find a family and the children get to go to school. They don't work in a factory. There are unions that struggle for better pay and safety. We'll never rest until the day all people live in dignity. We will have dignity. Tear down this misery. The world will hear our song. We're growing strong.
In Honduras.
We're growing strong.
Haiti.
We're growing strong.
Ghana.
We're growing strong.
But not so strong on Pacific Avenue, and not entirely on key either. Oh, well, that was called We Will Have Dignity. And it's definitely a good idea, which in a way is what this show is kind of about, too. Well, on with the street interview. Let's hear some more from Jeff Hay, who's a St. George resident who likes the street life downtown.
What about landlord-tenant relations in the St. George? A more sensitive topic, perhaps. How is the management of St. George treating the tenants?
I can only speak. I'm not really tight with many of the tenants. I know a few, and I've never actually had that discussion with them. For us personally, it seems to be going well. You know, and beyond that, I'm unaware. You know,
we've been talking with
Jeff. Hey.
Who lives at
the St. George?
Thank you, Jeff. Your room is located right above the flower kiosk on the Pacific Avenue side of the St. George.
Yes, it is.
And you frequently hear musicians playing.
Yes, I do, and many of them are absolutely fantastic.
You complain to the police about unreasonably disturbing noise out there?
No, not at all. There's no disturbing noise that I'm aware of.
Are you hard of hearing, perhaps?
I'm very good at hearing. And
are you there most of the
time? I'm there a lot. I'm there, especially in the afternoons. I'm there all the time and into the evening.
Have you ever seen protesters there doing tabling?
Doing what?
Tabling with literature.
Hi, Robert.
No, I actually haven't. I haven't seen protesters doing that. I've seen I've seen Greenpeace and Oxfam and those.
With their clipboards.
Yeah, right. I've seen that. That's about it.
Are you aware they've been banned from Trader Joe's?
I didn't know that.
They've been banned from the parking lot area in front of Trader Joe's by the Trader Joe's management.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. That really sucks.
Well, it's interesting. The reason I asked you, as I was telling you, because we had one resident of the St. George, possibly two, who have taken exception. Well, one of them actually called the police on us in January when we, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, were doing some singing and literature distribution in front of the St. George to draw attention to the homeless death rate, which is in significant excess to that of the usual of the population. Homeless people die younger. There were like 50-odd deaths last year in Santa Cruz County of the homeless death rate. And we recently lost in court. He testified that he was trying to sleep during the day, and he couldn't sleep during the day because of that. He felt justified, not even warning us, but in calling the police and getting the police to essentially say, leave or get a citation. And when we began to say, well, what exactly, how loudly do you want us to play, and so forth, and we had some admittedly heated conversation about it, that we weren't jailed, but we were cited. We were discouraged from playing there, in essence, for 4 months. And then we were fined $250 each. So that's not going to deter us from coming back, but it would be nice to know if we could have a person listening who would also take an objective stance on
that. Oh, God, I would be, honestly, I would be disappointed if the musicians left. I enjoy every afternoon. I can count on these guys coming by. Every so often, if I got a buck, I give them one. I love it. I absolutely love it. I can almost set my watch. You know what I mean?
You're obviously a troublemaker.
Yes, yeah. I'm a definite pain in the ass, I guess. But I love it. Those guys, to me, it's the whole color of Santa Cruz. You know what I mean? I mean, do we really want this sterile, or would we like a place to live, is how I look at it. I mean, it's... You know, well, let's go live in, Corona del Mar or somewhere if we want gated communities and no one ever speaking on the street, no common area, no fellowship of any kind allowed. You know, I mean, this is beautiful. It's the exact opposite of something bad. It's something wonderful. I should be
you're obviously
admission.
You're obviously admission. Crazy. I can see that. But yeah, just about enough of your rant. And again, we've been talking.
Jeff, hey.
Thanks, Jeff.
And I'm not even running for anything.
Or from anything.
Yeah, or from anything.
Oh dear. Well, it sounds like a well, that's probably needs a little speedy activity here. Let's inject a little speed into that.
What, 8:45 on Thanksgiving? Yeah, about that. And we're talking with
Nikki Shesso.
Nikki, you're munching a little food, but you have frozen hands.
My hands are so cold. And you know what I found out coming down here, because I normally live in Salinas and Monterey area, and I was asking a lot of the people out here what they really need if I ever got more money again, because my unemployment's coming to an end, along with 4 million other people. So I know that there's people that are going to need things out here, and I asked them, and they said the things that they really need the most that would be appreciated the most would be gloves, warm socks, knit caps, you know, for their, to keep their...
Switching to slow speed.
They needed warm caps, gloves, warm socks, and blankets this year. And there's going to be 4 million people across the United States that their unemployment's coming to an end without enough jobs. And this is people in very ice-cold areas across the United States. So I just ask everybody, would you please donate gloves, blankets, socks, and hats and things to people to keep them warm out here, because they're having a very difficult time. And just give out of your heart that way, because they really need these things. So just share a little bit of love.
And I believe Nikki or one of her friends then later called me the next night saying that she wanted to do a blanket drive. And I kind of tried to hook her up to people who were doing that, but I haven't heard any more about it. If weather's gotten somewhat warmer at night, but it's still pretty darn cold. And with the Homeless Service Center now having closed its doors during the day, as I understand, unless you are part of a program or getting your mail or making a phone call or conducting some business, apparently you're not allowed to stay warm there anymore unless you're coming specifically for the meals, which are only at breakfast and then at dinner. It's a more difficult situation, and it's interesting. Still haven't got any reports on why the Homeless Service Center is returning to this old, bad, pre-Doug Loiselle policy. Doug Loiselle was the former Homeless Service Center director who liberalized policies at the Homeless Service Center before being bounced out. So if you do have stuff to donate, I encourage you to get out there and donate it. I'm, you know, not really a big charity man myself, but if you do have stuff you want to give away and you want to announce it on the air, please give a call at 427-3772.
How has Santa Cruz been treating you?
Santa Cruz is wonderful. I love Santa Cruz, except I didn't realize it was illegal to smoke a cigarette walking down the street when my tax dollars pay for these streets. And I was absolutely shocked. I didn't know it. And the police car drove by me really slowly, and I went, why was he driving slowly? He said, oh, you can't smoke on the street. I said, well, I'm not smoking anything except for a cigarette. And they said, no, that's like a $300 ticket. I said, are you serious?
Pacific Avenue, we have a no smoking rule.
This seems like this is completely unconstitutional. This air is shared everywhere across the earth. What difference does it matter if I smoke a cigarette in Santa Cruz versus smoking one in Salinas or Capitola?
Or the evils of secondhand smoke, as distinguished from carbon monoxide from cars, is a very serious health hazard, according to the Santa Cruz City Council.
Well, now, here's the thing. First, they put us outside smoking, okay, and they say that smoking kills us. No, what's going to kill us is being outdoors smoking in the freezing weather. Now we can't even do that. We are not a third world country. This is the United States of America, and I have even worked for the federal government. I have never heard anything so outrageous in my life.
It's a confession. Are you apologizing for your work with the government?
No, I'm very proud of that work of the government. I'm just shocked that it's come down to the point where a town can become a sanctuary city for people coming over the border illegally, but I can't smoke a cigarette. But I could die for my country if I served.
Or kill for your country if you go to Afghanistan. Get rid of them Islamic people.
Right, but I don't have the right to kill myself with a cigarette. Nope. It makes no sense.
It serves the government's interest for you to kill Islamic people, but if you kill yourself, well, I suppose that might help too, actually.
Well, yeah, so that would probably make everybody happy, but, like, I'm a grown adult, and I can... You know,
but do you have money? I mean, that's the question. Where's your bucks, girl?
That's right. If I was working in one of these stores and come out and smoke a cigarette, would they give me a hard time or would they just drive by and leave me alone?
You would have to, if you went to a side street and man had a low profile, it's you're supposed to be 20 feet from a window or doorway on the side streets and not at all on Pacific Avenue, I believe. It's... It hasn't been challenged in the courts, but there are similar, I'm not sure how similar the ordinances are in other cities, but there are ordinances in other cities.
If I am 20 feet away from that door or 50 feet away from that door and I am smoking a cigarette, if they give me a ticket, I guarantee you I will be the first one to take it to court. And I would welcome anybody starting a class action suit with me to do so, or I would love to join with anyone else, but I would recommend anybody start a class action suit against this.
We have some attorneys, no doubt, that you wish to put forward for this class action.
Oh, wow. I work for 3 trial attorneys.
So they're going to step forward and help you.
Oh, I'm sure they would love that.
Excellent. Well, I think we need to tag you further, woman, to get you more involved. Perhaps you'd like to help end the sleeping ban as well as the sitting ban. It's illegal. She is illegally sitting on the sidewalk, you should be aware. She's less than 10 feet from a building. 14, sorry, thank you. 14 feet from a building. So she is vile. Actually, you're sitting on a backpack. I think that may be an exception.
That is unacceptable.
But not according to some cops. So.
I am physically disabled, and my plates say so on my vehicle, and if I need to sit down, I'm going to sit down. I'm wondering, was this voted in by the people, or was this just something arbitrarily put on the citizens of the United States of America in this town?
Voted by the merchants in 1994 through their shitty council, city council, as we like to call it.
City council, but nevertheless, this was not voted on by the people on the ballot anywhere, correct?
There's no referendum requirements in any cities, unlike in Maine, Vermont, and perhaps New Hampshire.
These things are outrageous and very backwards, and if anybody needs to sit down, if they're in pain and they need to sit down, no one has the right to tell them not to, especially if they're disabled. Again, I would ask people to start a class action suit against this.
I'd love to see it happen, and we hope you will be coming to the next Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which meets every Wednesday at 10:30 at the Abbey Cafe, also the Vintage Faith Church. So you're invited.
I will certainly try. Right now I'm in finals up until December 12th in Salinas, and I'm planning on going to UC Santa Cruz possibly. I'm going to be delivering my transcripts down here. So I can certainly see that this needs some action. And I would be more than happy to look into this further and try to be a voice to help.
We've been talking with...
Nikki Schesso.
Thank you, Nikki.
Whoa. Well, I hope that I'm not getting too much ambient background noise competing with those tapes. That was a street interview from Thanksgiving evening. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I just got a request from a caller who wondered about a jaywalking ticket I got for jaywalking at a demonstration. More properly, it was jaywalking after the largest demonstration of a sort of a march from one place to another sort that I've ever seen happen in Santa Cruz. That was the fateful last of the anti-war demonstrations that happened a couple of weeks before the Fuhrer Bush, Fuhrer Obama's predecessor, bombed Iraq, invaded Iraq. That's the younger Bush in 2003 in March. And what happened there was a big march. I think it was from the county building all the way up the hill to the park. Up the hill on Mission Street to the church is, Holy Cross Church, I believe it is. And there were thousands of people in that march. It was amazing. And then, of course, it was amazing how little subsequent protest there was once the war started. Contrasted very sharply with the kind of protest that happened when the elder Bush began bombing Iraq in 1991, or in late 1990, or thereabouts. I think it was 91 in January, or maybe December. The entire front of what is now CBS, and that was then Long's, was graffitied completely with anti-war slogans. There were people blocking the freeways. There was massive numbers of people downtown protesting. It was a real tumult. Of course, I was going to say that the elder Bush was a Republican and the Democrats were in opposition, but that was also true in 2003. And it shows you the depth of the corruption and difference and servility and fear that has really corroded the American conscience and is continuing to eat its way into the current conscience and heart even more deeply today under our savior Obama, who has expanded the wars, particularly the war in Afghanistan, and while maintaining 50,000 troops in Iraq and I don't know how many security forces there. Security for what? Foreign occupation troops. And it's just people are not, either they're not interested in opposing it, they're worried that, you know, Republicans would do worse. Of course, Republicans would have trouble doing worse because they'd be opposed by a Democratic opposition. Democrats don't have any opposition. They go full steam ahead, except for, you know, a few lone voices on the left who eventually go along anyway, like Woolsey and others who are supposed left Democrats but eventually fold. Anyway, I was a part of this protest. I was reporting for it, and I actually did a lot of subsequent discussion of it on free radio. And for those who are interested in this, it's an example of police targeting activists. And more than that, an example of police wanting to punish people who do not respect their authority, even when their authority is inappropriately exercised. And what had happened was the police had blocked off the streets for the protest. I was walking back from the protest. There were, you know, hundreds of people walking back. And I walked across Mission Street, Mission, where Mission becomes Water, right up the hill from where Mission becomes Water Street, you know, what comes Water Street at the town clock as you go up the hill. I was coming down the hill from Mission, on Mission Street, and I and Becky Johnson walked across the street, and a police officer drove by in a car and said, go back, even though there was no other traffic on the road. And I was halfway across, and I sort of ignored him, and I walked across because there was no violation of the law. The actual jaywalking law, as far as I knew it then, there were two ways of violating the jaywalking law. One is if you are walking between two traffic signals on a block where there's no intervening street without a traffic signal. I know this sounds kind of strange and technical and doesn't seem to comport with the common sense of jaywalking, but that's my understanding of the vehicle code. And the other is if you are actually interfering with a vehicle, you know, causing it to slow down or causing it to have to stop or brake or something. That's jaywalking at any point. And I was ticketed. I've been ticketed for that, too, after I was walking across a protest or from a protest across the street to my car on Pacific Avenue in a crosswalk while criticizing a police officer, of course. So I got a ticket for that. But, I mean, more important or more interesting in that regard have been the many jaywalking tickets, or, I don't know, half dozen or so jaywalking tickets given out to activist Steve Argue, who is a longtime activist in Santa Cruz, now more of a writer than an activist because he's still an activist, but he's doing a lot of he's married and he's going to school and he's trying to write a book and he's become more sedentary. Although he's been on my show and he did some analysis. He's a socialist, one might say even a communist, who takes a very radical perspective and has a very radical critique of what goes on in Santa Cruz and the United States. He also, unusually for people on the left, he has been interested in actually putting his body where his mouth and his heart are, and he's gone to jail for such things as, for example, sitting at a political table on Pacific Avenue for more than an hour, which is now a crime, almost a unique Santa Cruz crime. I don't think there Maybe there's one or two other cities who have a law that says you have to move along every hour if you set up a table. And in fact, if you set up a table and it's not blocking the sidewalk, and Pacific Avenue's sidewalks are made specifically large so that that doesn't happen, there should be no problem, except that, of course, the Coonerties and Lynn Robinson and the Rotkins and Matthews have all colluded, and the Downtown Association, to create laws that essentially make about 95% of the sidewalk forbidden territory, period, for, let's say, sitting. If you want to sit down on the sidewalk, you have to be 14 feet away from all kinds of things, buildings, crosswalks, kiosks, telephone stands, sculptures, benches, leaving very little legal space to sit. Now, there's somewhat more space. You have to be 10 feet away from most of these items to set up a political table, but they also moved in this move-along-every-hour law. And more recently, they've been using the unreasonably disturbing noise law to go after musicians. So it is a narrowing circle of freedom around the First Amendment. And perhaps I'll be talking more about that. For those who are interested in following the history of this, one good place to go is indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. And I want to say, without trying to sound boastful or egotistical, check out my articles. Go to the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website and search for Norse, N-O-R-S-E. And you'll find a history of such things as the drum circle struggle, the struggle to stop the parking lot panic law, the law that makes it illegal to sit in your car and chat or stand next to your car with friends and talk or give a speech in a parking lot. It's all illegal. And the only thing you can do in a parking lot is park or retrieve your car or walk through. I suppose you can give a speech as you walk or give a speech as you park or retrieve your car. But it effectively removes a lot of public space. Anyway, there are other issues, too. The actions of the city council in passing restrictive anti-homeless laws around sleeping, sitting, performing, and so forth. And you can follow this stuff, at least insofar as I've written about it. And in my stories, you can find links to other people's writings as well. So I encourage people to take a look at that. Also, The Alarm, which was a newspaper published briefly during the early years of the millennium, 2001, 2, and 3, before it kind of went under, had a number of local focus discussions. And also, of course, there's the Street Shit Sheet, which I wrote a lot of, and which you can find in the library, which goes into a lot of this stuff, mostly from much earlier in the late 80s and early 90s. There also were a number of radio interviews that were done on this subject, on issues of harassment by jaywalking, for jaywalking tickets and so forth. Even the actual incident was I recorded it as the police officers ticketed me. I had witnesses that it was others regarded it as a bogus ticket. I was found guilty. And you might say, wait a minute, what about what the law said? Well, what the law says in Santa Cruz doesn't matter as much as what the judges say. And you get one kind of level of appeal, that which takes a lot of energy and a lot of time, and also legal expertise. And usually what those of us who get tickets do often do is we let it go, and we go back on the streets and continue to engage in activism anyway. Although they've made that more difficult, too, because now if you get three unattended citations, it's mostly for homeless people or poor people who can't afford to go to court and deal with tickets one way or another. I deal with tickets almost invariably through community service, which actually is better termed community slavery, because you're being forced. First, you're forced to pay a fee to another organization called Community Options, which is a kind of a strange organization. You ask for a list of the organizations you can do community service with through this Community Options organization, and they will let you look at it, but they won't let you copy it. That's a strange thing, and I've tried to get the board of directors to change that policy and the kind of stiff-necked coldness and refusal to do that. It's kind of strange. Anyway, we'll have maybe some more of that on Sunday if the caller just called in is interested and wants to call back on that issue. We'll see. But there are a lot of old radio shows that cover this. I've done a lot of it's archived on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. Now, at the moment, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the Huff website, is down. And hopefully that will change soon. We have a volunteer worker on that one who is swamped with other important priorities, such as paying the rent, getting his own website and server up. That's actually Thomas Levitt, who does his own radio show in the morning, on Sunday mornings, right before mine. He calls it the wake-up call. But in the meantime, if you want to get old shows, you can by going to... there's not really a website where they're displayed, but if you know the date of the show you're looking for, you can get it just as if you want to hear this show again. It goes into archives that you can reach even when the Huff website is down. And if you want more information on how to do that, all you have to do is call me on the Huff line, which is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, and I'll show you the secret key and the secret code as to how to get into those back shows. Let's hear some more street interviews, and who knows, maybe a call or two from a caller, if anybody's listening and anybody feels like talking.
Thank you. If anybody wants to contact me further on this, my email address is mischiefmanaged, that's M-I-S as in Sam, C-H-I-E-F as in Frank, managed, M-A-N-A-G-E-D, _2 at hotmail.com. Yes, it is from Harry Potter.
So there. He has a further comment.
I'm a business major, and this is bad for business in Santa Cruz, and this is bad for tourism. I mean, what are they going to do? They have visitors come to this town that don't understand these laws. They're going to give them tickets and discourage people coming down here for commerce in this economy. Is this really very clever?
Well, what they're doing is they're going to intimidate people who are smoking by telling them it's against the law, and the tourists will stop smoking because they presumably have cars they can go into and smoke inside their cars or something. But homeless people have no place to go, and it's illegal to smoke in the parks as well, by the way, so you can't do that. Well, technically illegal. And if I see you, I may have to turn you in. It's a matter of principle, you know, nothing personal. We don't want your kind running around smoking up the parks.
You know, this anti-smoking stuff is completely ridiculous in the first place. I mean, nobody has the right to tell me what to do. I'm a U.S. citizen. I can understand if I'm doing something that harms someone else, but they have not proven that outdoors that this is harming anyone else unless it's in their direct path or within a certain distance from the person where they can actually, you know, gain anything from this smoke. The carcinogens go into me, and then they go straight up in the atmosphere. Yes, they can argue about the atmosphere, but they're really going to have to prove that one, which is going to be very difficult, that the smoke itself is doing all this damage. Okay, that smoking itself, the little bit, of course, together, yes, there may be a little bit of damage, but things dissipate. The smoking on the sidewalk, walking down the street, is not harming anyone unless you're close to someone else. And then that person has the right to say that offends me, step back, and then you say, okay, I'm sorry, thank you.
You're making reasonable claims. That's not what we do here in Santa Cruz. You have to run it by the mayor and the city council. It's very simple. Or even better, the staff. The staff really runs the city council, so run it by the staff. Anyway, Nikki, we expect to see lawsuits forthcoming from you soon. If not, I will have to castigate you the next time I see you.
I'll be there as a voice for everybody if they need me, because this is certainly violating my civil rights.
Are you indoors or outdoors?
Presently, I'm indoors, and I also help to run a private transitional housing facility, but I have been outdoors in the past for 8.5 years, and I went to college, and I graduated Phi Theta Kappa on the president's list, magnum cum laude, and I'm also on the national dean's list. So, homeless, and I did that while I was homeless.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, it's Bob.
Watch out, Bob, you're on the air, so beware.
You bet, cool.
Uh-huh.
I went to the Wes Modes hearing Tuesday.
And tell us a bit of who Wes is and what why you did that.
Well, I think I told you when I left there, and thank you for turning me on to it. I think it was important for me to witness personally. I was quite shocked at the certain audacity of the district attorney. This is a what do you call it? A not a popular case, but a you know, renowned case. I can't think of the
famous
phrase.
Famous case, notorious case?
Yeah, this is a well-known case, and blah, blah, blah.
For those who don't know it, you want me to summarize it? Or
please, go ahead.
Wes Modes is an activist who has helped found the Free School, which is a sort of a collection of people who do classes independently of classrooms and don't charge money for it. He's been responsible for others in opening up a cafe where...
A high-profile case. I'm sorry, Robert.
High-profile, yeah.
That's what the guy said.
Who is the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is about a block from the Saturn Cafe on Pacific. He has been involved with the Trash Orchestra, which actually was a sort of an element of this case. Trash Orchestra is sort of a group of as a percussion group that goes to political events and supports human rights causes. And one of those causes was the Drum Circle and its attempt to maintain its right to play in a public space next to the old, next to the Wednesday Farmers Market. And that's where he was arrested for allegedly battering an officer, which means illegally touching an officer, and I think resisting arrest. He was playing a drum next to an officer as an officer was trying to arrest a Food Not Bombs activist named Jack, who I think the officer suspected of taking down the little green wire mesh fence around the tree that authorities were putting up to drive away the Drum Circle. And every Wednesday, of course, the Drum Circle people took down the mesh fence, neatly laid it aside, played, and then city authorities would later put it up again the next Wednesday until this charade became ridiculous. But in any case, Modes, the attack on Modes and Jack produced a near riot. People were very angry about what the police were doing, particularly because they began to beat up Modes. He was taken to the hospital, and he was then, instead of the police being charged for assault and abuse under color of law and all the other rights that essentially were being denied to people there, Modes was charged, and he... After a year of fighting it in court, he kind of gave up on the issue and copped a plea, which said, well, I'll plead to one of the charges, obstructing an officer, and the other, if I get probation for a year, and then in a year, the other charge will be dropped, and it'll all be over, and there'll be no jail consequence or further fine consequence, etc. However, authorities, some months after that, or actually within the month after that, in January or February of this year, found that Modes had walked in the DIY Last Night Parade, which was the thing that presumably is going to happen again this year, though I don't know. I'm not officially organizing it, but I'll probably be there.
No one's officially organizing it.
Right,
I
no
want
one...
to talk about this. Wes Modes has been the fall guy of 2010. They have done to this guy is appalling, Robert. It is appalling.
Well, let me just say that what happened was he was given an infraction ticket for being in the parade without a permit. And the question at the hearing that you were at and that I was at, Bob, was whether this ticket should be used to violate his probation on the other issue, because he was supposed to obey all laws. And this was a law he allegedly hadn't obeyed. AFEC was convicted of it, even though there was a lot of evidence that other people had done exactly the same thing and not been charged. And
absolutely.
You know, that sort of thing. Anyway, it was a traditional event that happened for 5 years. No one was injured. Everyone liked it.
They tried to entrap him, Robert. They tried to entrap him. And this is clear. The, the city's event director made attempts to contact Modes. Modes didn't respond. Now, had he responded, you see, why didn't they nail Modes as the organizer? Because they couldn't.
He was actually originally charged with organizing,
of course,
and then they altered
they
the charge
not legally.
To participating
in
a parade.
And they tried to entrap him, and that didn't work, so they nailed the guy as the sole participant.
And if Modes was guilty, then so were hundreds, if not thousands of
now,
others.
Now, Modes did 500 hours of community service, 500 hours.
Now,
there was something
charge.
That went down at a drum circle. There was an altercation. Modes ends up in the hospital. Whatever happened, right? Resisting arrest, assault on a police officer. The charge was dropped with the condition that Wes doesn't get anything beyond a parking ticket for the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think it was battery on a police officer.
Is battery on the assault on a police officer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This guy, Modes, has been accused in the press of being the instigator of the May Day riot. A couple of months after that, he is the only person that is convicted as a participant in the 2009 New Year's Eve event on Pacific Avenue. I mean, I walked away from that being shocked. The DA, the prosecuting DA, he was so sure, right? No one was going to challenge him. This is a high-profile case, Your Honor, and he can't do this and he can't do that. He can't do anything. He can't meet in anything that would be construed as an organized event.
Well, let's put it this way. Anytime
what they've done to this guy, I really think this is an outrage.
What his probation states, first of all, I thought probation was over as of this hearing, but no, they extended it for 6 months. And what that means is he's given a dictate to obey all laws, which in the past has judges have always told us, or other, actually, I've not been on probation at all. I don't accept probation. I don't think it's a good idea for this very reason. They'll go after you in this way. But other people, other homeless activists who've taken probation, the judges in the past have said to them, this does not include such infractions as the sleeping ban or other municipal codes. Well, the times have changed, or the focus is different for Wes Moses. They're saying anything you do that involves the police, that violates a municipal code downtown, will bring the district attorney back to say, okay, you violated your probation here. You're going to, you know, we'll see if we can, you know, screw you around for a year in jail. He didn't say that explicitly, but he gave, I don't know if you, it was my impression that that was what he was implying. You cannot do such things as sit within 14 feet of a building or sit at a political table for more than an hour. You know, or sit in your car in a parking lot and read a book.
Oh, anything. Yeah. I took it as anything beyond a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, Wes Moses would end up serving.
Yeah, the difference between a parking ticket is not a municipal code violation. A speeding ticket is a vehicle code violation. So, yeah, they aren't, you know, Wes kind of used the wrong.
There is an article in the Sentinel, still up. 8/17/2010, Wes Moses found guilty in DIY parade case. Santa Cruz anarchist activist sentenced to 30 hours community service. Let me just read the first sentence. A county judge on Monday found Wes Moses, a past organizer of the unsanctioned do-it-yourself parade, guilty of participating. This is the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Guilty of participating in an unpermitted event. An infraction that marks a significant victory. This is the Sentinel once again. An infraction that marks a significant victory for the city, for city officials, excuse me, fed up with the anarchist activists.
Yeah, yeah. It's a smear
Robert,
deal.
Robert, yeah. Norris, I mean, I have to ask you. I know it's naive to ask. Where was the ACLU local chapter on this?
Well, you and I know, because we talked about this, and actually you and I have exchanged emails with Mike Rotkin, who is on the board of directors of the ACLU, as well as being currently the mayor of Santa Cruz, outgoing mayor, that the ACLU, you know, it hasn't been anywhere on this or any other civil liberties issue involving the community in Santa Cruz for some time, with the exception, I think, of Don Zimmerman testified against expanding the parking lot law. And Rotkin, I want to give him, you know, due credit, voted against the final expansion of the law to the parking lots, although he had voted for parking lot number 9 and for the garages, making it illegal to sit in your car and, you know, and change your baby's diapers in your car or wait for your grandmother.
The extent to which law enforcement, Santa Cruz law enforcement, went to entrap Wes Moses, and whether Wes Moses did a website or a flyer or whatever, does not make him the organizer. They had the special events coordinator sent numerous contacts to Moses and asking for what time the stuff was going to start, et cetera. Moses didn't respond as well. He shouldn't. It was an attempt to entrap him. Had he responded, they would have had the legal means to go after him as the organizer. I think it is at such an appalling level that this went down, that this guy who was brandable, who was expendable, who too many in the community needed a fall guy for the May Day riot, that Wes Moses could be railroaded in this way in this town in 2010.
Mm-hmm. And there was not a peep out of the one organization that ought to stand up, if it has any meaning at all in this town.
Well, remember,
that's the ACLU Santa Cruz chapter.
Remember, Bob, that the ACLU hasn't even stood up for the canvassers that are raising money for the ACLU who have been arrested for asking people to take literature as they stand in the back of Trader Joe's in the parking lot. You know, under the Pruneyard decision, a court decision of 30 years or 40 years ago, they're allowed to do that, 30 years ago, actually.
What do you make, Robert, of the West Modes?
Well, the ACLU is a defunct organization in Santa Cruz that has been deeply corrupted by its involvement with city officials and city politics, and that's the problem. West Modes is an activist who's actually in his own way. He and others have helped create alternate spaces for people to be in, the Sub Rosa Cafe, the free school areas where people can learn and study different courses. They were for a long time, you know, engaging in musical activity, percussion activity downtown, but his prosecution stopped that. He became intimidated from doing that. You know, I don't think it was wise for him to follow this legal strategy of trying to do a low-profile approach. I think he should have tried to maintain the protest approach. But, you know, everybody...
Well, we all have our lives.
Sure, we have our lives.
I mean, you know, and that is the shame. That is where...
Yeah, he has a
one
family.
One wonders where the leadership was in this town that would allow this to happen to an individual.
The leadership...
You don't like West Modes, well, that's too bad. Okay?
Yeah, the
you
leadership...
You don't get to nail the guy as the only participant, force him through community service, slander his name, mm-hmm. Defame his character,
well,
and nobody stands up with any credibility.
Oh, the leadership was prosecuting him. That's what the leadership was doing. You know, I mean, it's there were a number of us stood up and, you know, supported Wes. I'm a little concerned that Wes has not done the same. He hasn't reciprocated. But, you know, he does have a lot of other stuff going. But, you know, I'd love to see more solidarity between activists. I know when you yourself were harassed for gathering signatures on an advisory petition on rent control in 1999 by Officer Howes, I don't know, where were the people standing up for you?
And Kevin Vogel was the backup officer.
Yeah,
you know, things have changed significantly. The days of gathering signatures on Pacific Avenue, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of mixed about it. I can see where there would want to be some degree of pacification. People feel uptight, but at some point, and you raised the point of ACLU fundraisers. It's interesting, ironic. The ACLU, and you brought this up on your Sunday show, seems to have degenerated into a fundraising organization. That's their purpose.
Yeah,
on a local basis.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point, we need to allow ourselves to be confronted with political reality. It's uncomfortable sometimes, but if we don't allow ourselves that opportunity, then we slide further and further into, and I'll use the inflammatory phrase, a police state.
Yeah, for sure.
Where you look the other way, and you laugh it off, and you slough it off, and you deny.
It
was told to me many, many years ago that this kind of stuff can happen in a town like this because it has this progressive social aura.
It's an illusion is what it is. It's a great illusion. And it's particularly, you see it nationally with the Democratic Party, you know, and Obama. But you see it locally here with Rotkin, who likes to, you know, he parades around the university as, you know, supporting the students and opposing the cuts. But you don't hear, you don't see him, you know, you see him leading the charge against, you know, in favor of the sleeping ban on the homeless and restricting the rights of protesters at City Hall. For the first time this year, City Hall grounds are now closed at night to anyone who wants to walk there or sit there. You can't do that anymore. You're violating a law.
Social justice and those kinds of issues, environment, you know, B+. Civil liberties, F.
Yeah, and gun wars.
And it's a fear of outcome, of local application of values, and ultimately a hypocrisy. And I think at some point you name names and whatever the outcome is, the outcome is. Mike Rotkin, as the chair of the ACLU local chapter, is a fraud and a disaster, and it compromised. He's been compromised for so long that any changes to the structure in the ensuing weeks are going to be simply lipstick on a pig.
Well, he has to be. It has to be said. I don't know if he's the chair. I know he did answer our letters when we sent you and I both emailed.
I think
this
were rocking to allow himself to be removed for 1 year. It would change the absolute face of the ACLU local chapter.
Well, I think you're too optimistic.
I may well be, but personally, I think it needs to be said. I think that if the ACLU local chapter has any purpose, any mission other than fundraising, it should have stood up for the West Modes Affair. I think you and I would be in agreement on that.
And when it does not, it simply becomes a tool. Right.
For the establishment.
And what I've said to you, Bob, is that rather than attack a defunct organization which isn't doing anything, you know, interestingly enough, I bet if you'd contacted the ACLU in San Francisco, and this is actually what West Modes did, and one of the reasons I think that the city officials are going after him. In 2005...
He became a hot potato, but go ahead, please. I don't know.
Kevin Vogel, who was then, I guess, a lieutenant or vice chief or something, and now is our acting police chief, assigned individuals to infiltrate the DIY last night, the first time it was organized. And that was a scandal because it was in violation of basic political standards of openness. People can organize politically as long as they're not engaging in illegal, conspiratorial, criminal activity. And sending in undercover police officers is a form of political surveillance that's not acceptable, particularly after the scandals of the 60s and 70s around, you know, COINTELPRO and so forth. Well, this became the ACLU locally did nothing about this, but the ACLU in San Francisco, when I think John Crew was approached, or maybe it was another individual up there, was approached by West Modes, they made Public Records Act requests and forwarded their standards for the San Francisco political surveillance restrictions that are appropriate up there and that they recommended we have down here. And they got a lot of records, and it became a massive scandal. And so what happened was someone had to be assigned to investigate this. And who was assigned? Well, Kevin Vogel assigned himself to investigate it.
The fox guarded the
hen
house.
He investigated himself. This was okayed by then-mayor, at that time he was also Mayor Rotkin, city manager Dick Wilson.
Goes without saying. I'm sorry to sound so cynical. Please
continue. And finally, the police auditor, who generally has been pretty bad, and a waste of time and money, generally, as far as I'm concerned, making no public reports of any written sort over the last 7 years since he's been in, paid, $20,000 to $40,000 a year. He couldn't quite stomach this, and he said, you can't have Kevin Vogel, who did this stuff, investigating himself. And so Cynthia Matthews and Rotkin kind of did a little dance, and they came up with some essentially rationalization of the same policies that allowed Vogel to do what he was doing in the first place. And it's not that I think Vogel is a bad guy. I like Kevin Vogel as a nice man. I've got a number of positive things to say about him, even on civil liberties grounds from earlier behaviors. But in this case, he was really way out of base. He should have been called in line, and he wasn't. And now he's the police chief, and that kind of attitude continues. But Modes was responsible for breaking the scandal. And I don't think the police department and the city manager's office, which is now headed by Martine Bernal, has ever forgotten that. And I think that's one of the reasons he was targeted.
Like in the movie Serpico, he had the audacity to go to an outside agency.
Right.
And they tried to kill him.
Yeah, well...
The NYPD, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying this
movie,
is at that level, but nonetheless, this is a local application.
The real question, though, for us is what do we do? And I'm hoping people will continue to do organizing.
I think the local ACLU represents a significant aspect of citizen review, Robert.
And they don't.
And
they never
have credibility.
I don't agree with that.
Credibility should not be so compromised.
Yeah, well, they've never done any independent review. They've never exercised that function.
That's what I'm saying. I think we agree. It has been subverted.
Well, it hasn't even been subverted. It was never there. See, that's the problem. These are middle-class people who are more concerned with who's in power at city council and, whether there is, support for national policies than they are locally.
I agree.
And therefore, they have never been this concerned. It's not just Rotkin. It is a number of other people who are at the center of this. And therefore, it is, you know, I think it's an illusion. I mean, we'd like to find the one bad guy. And I do call out Rotkin. Of course, he's the mayor, so, you know, that's a good reason to hold him accountable. And
I think Rotkin has been the acting chair. And I think also Rotkin represents continuity.
Well, I think
Rotkin represents.
Yeah, I just don't want us to get lost in spending a lot of energy.
I'd like
on this.
To hear Mike Rotkin address the West Modes affair and the ACLU's lack of reaction to it.
Well, I think you probably could get him to do that. He's been on my show a number of times. He talks twice as fast as I do, which is quite something.
Why this did not rise to that occasion? Had the ACLU spoke out, it would have stopped it.
ACLU doesn't speak out on these issues. That's something that I keep telling you.
I hear they do in other towns, right?
Yes, in other towns, but not here.
Yeah, but they could and they should.
Well, you know that a lot...
I mean, does it mean that Rotkin and company control the ACLU and they are allowed to be compromised? And as you said about Westmoed's going to the Northern California...
Well, there's no
chapter.
There's no dissension that I've really seen inside the ACLU. We've sent, for example, you know, you were part of the drafting an initiative to bring the sleeping ban law to the voters. You may remember in the 90s, and
I helped gather signatures for that.
You
I still
did.
Feel that the way to deal with that issue is a ballot initiative.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, sure. And I think that, you know, but this ACLU, which in other cities like Los Angeles has taken lawsuits against their sleeping bans, here in Santa Cruz wouldn't even make a public statement against the sleeping ban. And this has been the case for the last 20 years. And Rotkin hasn't been involved with it, but I can't hold him accountable.
I think
for what
the ACLU
does.
Organization as a whole may well be interested in this issue.
The local ACLU is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the ACLU organization as a whole. If they have a purpose other than fundraising.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
It is local application of values, and if that's such, they have utterly failed.
Well, you should, of course they have, but you see, I've known this for years. We have spent, you know, it's interesting, Bernard Klitzner was our, you know, remember Bernard?
Of course.
He wanted to go to the ACLU meetings and tell them, you know, the same kind of earnest statements you're making. Why aren't you paying attention to these local civil liberties issues? And he did. And, of course, they ignored him.
Of course.
Although it has to be said, I was very impressed with his courage when... a year after Rotkin attempted to have me arrested for my "Where is the ACLU on the sleeping ban" sign that I walked into to a general meeting, and then this ironic occasion, the police refused to arrest me. They said, "He has a right to carry a sign, Mr. Rotkin."
Levitt was that there's a fundamental conflict of interest.
You know,
not just Rotkin, but all these folks.
Anyway,
the collusion with city council. They're not going to rock the boat.
Well, the issue,
so you
though,
do
is
not
how
have
do we,
an objective organization.
How do we effectively get civil liberties?
I think by pointing this out to the community.
Well,
that
certainly.
The ACLU
certainly.
Local,
that's what we're doing now.
These guys need to step aside for at least take a breather.
Well, they have
allow
stepped
those
aside.
That have the courage to step forward and do what the ACLU should do locally.
Well, I think that's why, as I've told you in emails, I think a new organization for those who have the energy to create one is needed, whether it's a National Lawyers Guild chapter, and they haven't done much either here, frankly, although they're much better in San Francisco and other cities, but here, you know, they don't even have a chapter. I think they used to have a representative down here. The ACLU, you know, is not, it's sort of this iconic name, but we must look really not to names and labels, Democratic Party, ACLU, but to the substance. And, you know, we need to create a new organization. Or let's put it this way. People who have the funds, the time, the energy, and the vision need to do it.
Well,
let me leave it
with this, Robert. I don't disagree with you. I do think, however, that leaving that open, that the ACLU Santa Cruz chapter, therefore, needs to be exposed for the subverted fraud that it is.
For sure. I've been doing that for years as best I can. And I encourage you and others to do the same, at the same time to try to find some way of not just exposing how absurd and hypocritical the ACLU is, but also how we can support people whose civil liberties are being trampled every day. That's what we need to do. And so we have to spend essentially our major energy on that, not on, you know, beating a dead horse, because the ACLU is a dead horse as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, I say if it's maybe not.
I think they're going to try to put lipstick on the pig.
Well, they always
when they have their meeting in January. But until those key folks resign, and we're Rotkin to leave even for 1 year, it would utterly change the very structure.
Remember, Rotkin is going out as mayor. He won't be in as of next.
Right, but he
December
will
14.
Be the functioning.
He'll be on the board of directors
of the ACLU board.
Yeah, he's still a powerful figure in town, no question about it.
Okay, amiable guy, likable guy. Maybe
what we need to do is have you and Rotkin debate this issue on free radio. I'll give him a call and ask him if he wants to be on the radio and debate it. Would you like to do that?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll call him up and ask him.
All right.
You take care, Bob.
Robert, thanks.
All right.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Although I often feel that Rotkin makes so many misstatements so fast that it's more a disinformation campaign than a healthy debate. But, you know, I suppose it makes good radio. You're tuned to Good Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772, or 831-427-3772, if you happen to be out of the area. I'm also going to check my email to see if I've gotten any exciting emails while Bob and I were talking. And it doesn't look very exciting, folks, but that's okay. We actually did discuss the ACLU. It came up at the Huff meeting. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It came up yesterday. Huff meets every week. Every Wednesday at 10:30 in the morning at the Vintage Faith Church's Abbey Cafe, which is up on Mission Street, right there on the corner of Mission and High. And you're invited to come on up if you want to be a part of that discussion and essentially planning to do actions. We have another action coming up this weekend at the Human Rights Day Affair, which happens after the Children's Parade downtown, where there is a large kind of get together, probably less smaller than last year, where there are going to be human rights issues discussed at the, where the heck is it? It's right across from Mobo Sushi in that building. Here we have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for that last phone call. It's good to hear Bob back on the air with you. So thanks for the call. It was a good call.
Yeah, sure. Any thoughts about what you heard?
Oh, it was all good. All good stuff.
I think I recognize your voice there. I'm not going to reveal your identity, though.
It's Mr. Unknown.
Yes.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I was actually, as usual, I let myself wander through these topics. But the ACLU came up yesterday at the Huff meeting, which I'm inviting people to come to every week. And I believe a couple of Huff members, against my advice, by the way, want to join the ACLU and attempt to steer it in a better direction. I think that's an utterly futile prospect in Santa Cruz. But, hey, I'd love to be wrong, and that would be great if that could happen. So that's something that may be happening. To join the ACLU, I think you have to contribute money, and it goes into the coffers of those who are currently in power. It's the same problem when you're dealing with a corrupt union. You know, you want to reform the union, you want to reform the Democratic Party, good luck. You really need probably to some mass organizing to we'll find some other outlet somewhere else. But, you know, different folks choose different ways. Sometimes the dazzle of labels can be very attractive and seductive. Anyway, this thing that's happening is at the Galleria. That's the phrase I was looking for. The Human Rights Fair on Saturday is at the Galleria. There's going to be a Huff table for those of you who want to check out what Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is doing. It's going to be, I think the show goes from, I think it's noon to 4 or noon to 5. Usually this was held in the Loudon Nelson Center in years past. I think it's a smaller event this year. At least there's less space. Last year Huff was in the Children's Parade because we were a part of the Human Rights Festival. We were, you know, authorized, and actually the city officials tried to keep us out of the parade because we were too political. And first the CHIP, the Downtown Association hack, former artist who is now fronting for the merchants who are essentially removing civil liberties one by one unless it meets their commercial standards, came up to me and said, you can't be in the parade. And I said, oh, yeah? Well, bite me. And we were in the parade. I was giving out literature about the abuse of police powers and the police department, what was going on there. And actually, other people violated the law by drowning out our songs. Different kind of parts of last year's parade had different songs. We had a song about, you know, downtown, the song which we were later arrested for, or I should say cited for, a month later in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, Coonerty Land, by a private citizen who felt we were disturbing his daytime sleep attempts. We have a caller. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Oh, hi, Robert. It's Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Just kind of wondering, I guess you said that there's a sushi restaurant next to the Galleria or something like that?
Mobu's Sushi.
Mobu's Sushi, okay. I don't think I've ever been there.
It's next to this, also the Riverside Cinema, if you know that movie.
Yeah,
theater.
Yeah, Riverside Cinema. And it's at 12 o'clock?
I believe it starts at 12, might start at 1. I mean, I think it's going to be kind of open all day. You know, it's a series of tables from different organizations who support human rights. It's Human Rights Day. It's kind of
UN.
UN
Human Rights Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Universal Declaration on Human Rights.
That's it, yeah.
All right.
Hey. Thanks for calling, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are again open, 427-3772. Got about half an hour left in the show. Thank you for calling in, folks. It's always nice to know that people are not only listening, but even more important, speaking, even if they're just clarifying what's cooking. That's what the whole point of this is. Let's hear some more street interviews, and maybe, again, street interviews will yield to real interviews, live interviews with people on the phone.
So,
what area, where were you living?
Salinas, California.
Wow. So you have to give us a full report on the Salinas homeless scene. We assume you speak Spanish. If not, why not? Bigot.
Ich spreche und schreibe Deutsch. That is
my... Hey, white area. I'm going to get you.
No, that's my nationality, but I'm an American first, and I'd see no reason to speak Spanish. I don't plan on doing business in Brazil. Or
Brazil speaks Portuguese.
Spain. Okay, they're Portuguese, but Spain or Mexico. And actually, Spanish is a conquistador language. I hate to
say... So is English.
Well...
So is German, for that matter.
Well, no... The Spanish actually kicked butt down there, unfortunately, I have to say. But we kicked them out of here along with the French, and somehow we're being forced to learn Spanish to get a job. I know people with master's degrees being turned down for jobs unless they know how to speak Spanish. Also myself, jobs I'm qualified for, I can't get because I don't speak another language that's not natural to me, being raised in this country, born and raised, and my family came over on the Mayflower.
When the jobs get outsourced, you need to be able to talk to the people of that country to persuade them to come in and work at one-fifth the wages.
I don't believe in that.
Don't? What's wrong with you? Are you claiming to be a patriotic American? Just who are you patriotic to?
My nationality is German on one side of my family. The other side of my family came over on the Mayflower, but we all assimilated to the United States of America and learned the language. And actually, German almost became the national language when the Constitution was formed. A lot of people don't realize that. But I plan on doing business with possibly India or China, and that would mean I need to learn Mandarin Chinese or Hindi, but actually if we're going to be learning any other language, we should be learning Cherokee, Apache, or Athabascan, or the tribes that were here before even we came here, not Spanish.
Sounds like a moral but not a practical solution. We've been talking with...
Nikki Shesso.
Thank you, Nikki.
And actually it's neither moral nor practical. Sounds like I was giving in a little bit to my schmooze with your interviewee person. There's a large, large Spanish-speaking population in California, and these are human beings who live here, and we're all part of the community, and that's why it's important to know Spanish. Es muy importante aprender español. En mi español es muy pequeño y muy malo. It's important to know Spanish, and my Spanish sucks. Here is a caller. Let's see if she speaks Spanish. Hola, ¿cómo estás?
My comment, Robert, was that last tape recorded section was not audible.
Oh, dear.
I'm not sure what was going on, but we could barely hear the person.
That sucks.
Anyway,
Oh, boy. Well,
are you listening through your headphones?
No, I'm listening
then
through my speakers.
You probably didn't catch it.
Well, then I'll just have to put on my headphones, Uncle Dennis.
Bye, Robert. See you soon.
Hey, thanks for monitoring, Dennis. So we'll see if actually I will listen through my headphones to the continuing interviews I have here on the streets. I don't know why this wouldn't be, may just be a defective cord, which is the probable situation, but let's see what happens.
Well, we're here in the streets with some crafts folks and some artists who are...
Actually, we're here on the air with another caller, and I can hear it through the headphones, so there, Uncle Dennis. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Woo! I heard the tape recording clearly, and I didn't have any trouble hearing it at all, so maybe it's his radio?
Maybe it's his hearing aid. Uncle Dennis, turn up
anyway,
your hearing aid.
Talking ears here.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Yeah, no, I appreciate, folks trying to clarify what's going on, whether it's Dennis or the latest caller. If you can't hear it, call in and tell me. But it looks like some people can and some people can't. So, I don't know, maybe your radio isn't working too well there, Uncle Dennis, or who knows, maybe the last caller just has a very good radio. Could be also a function of where you're getting the broadcast from.
Passing on stones and necklaces and wristbands for donation in front of Borders, and it's about 4 o'clock on the 27th of November. And it's been raining on and off all day, but how long have you folks been out here?
About an hour.
And what's your name?
Crystal.
And you are?
Sunshine.
And who's this?
Maya.
And?
Brett.
Bren. And are you all joint workers on this table, or some of you hangers-on? What's going on here?
Actually, I think someone made at least one thing each on this table, at least. And mostly it's her and I.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's pretty nicely arranged. How are sales or donations going?
Good. We made about $50 yesterday and some other necessities, and today we have our money for our firewood that we were trying to manifest, and it's all going good.
Sleeping illegally outside, are we?
Sometimes, but actually on this particular occasion, we paid for a campsite.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There were campsites available. Where? What camp? What campground did you use?
Mount Madonna.
Mount Madonna, huh. And how many campsites are usually free up there? Do you have any idea?
No idea.
Squatter's rights.
What is a campsite cost at Madonna?
Only $12 in November.
And how many people can use that site?
As many people as you could fit in two cars.
So all four of you are up there?
Yeah.
Where are you all from?
I'm from San Diego.
San Diego?
Yeah.
And how long have you been in town?
Just a couple days.
What do you think?
I like it.
Any positive or negative interactions with the police here?
No, we really haven't run
positive,
into any.
Actually,
yeah,
to tell you the truth, being a vendor here in Santa Cruz, it seems to be the most lenient city I've visited in California so far. And I wish other cities in California would open their minds to be more wise towards the people on the streets, and especially with the economy. Got to make a little living, and to have vending illegalized in most places is kind of hard to deal with. But here, it's really lenient. You just got to follow their simple little rules. And actually, the hospitality folks are really, really kind. And the cops don't even look at me like I'm strange. We come from OB.
OB being...
Ocean Beach, San Diego, and it seems like it's a lot of prejudice down there, and kind of like fascist cops, but it's good here.
Do you want to say something?
No.
You agree?
I agree, yes.
And you agree?
I do.
We all agree.
Nobody disagrees. This is very boring. Well.
And I actually and I have nothing bad to say about Santa Cruz at all right now.
That's all right. Again, we've been talking with...
Crystal.
Sunshine.
Maya. Bren.
And there you have it. Thanks. And we're in front of Santa Cruz Gifts and Jewelry. And we have three folks doing some singing. Looks like two youths and a child. And an open guitar case. All illegally placed next to the side of the building. But they have a sound to them, don't they?
It has to be said that most of the folks that I interview and see and spoke to are new. The old folks just don't seem to be there that much, which I think is part of the general cleansing of the avenue. Hi, you're on Free Radio, and I'm Robert.
Robert's Uncle Dennis, I figured it out. You're actually not coming in on one of the stereo channels. I'm not sure whether it's left or right, but one side is not coming in.
And what should I do, Dennis?
The VU meters, are they both going up and down when you're playing your tapes correctly?
Yeah, they are.
Are they both at the same level?
I'll take a look when I play the tape. I can't see right now, but I will
okay.
take a second look. Thank you.
I'll be in soon.
And stay with us, callers, for the if you want to follow this educational situation with me and Uncle Dennis. Let's get back to the street interviews.
Hey, Peter.
And Uncle Dennis is right.
What?
The apparently only half of the stereo signal is going out, so... well, there looks like I don't know what to say, but Uncle Dennis will hopefully correct that. In the meantime, just keep listening to at least one of your speakers.
So we're talking with...
I have court on Tuesday. I'll talk to you.
Good luck. So this has... But we are talking about a...
Do you have a hot for a...
Yeah, I'll give you a card. But you, is there any... You want people to attend this court appearance? Have to do with, again, the seizure of one of your children, right?
Both.
Both of your children. Wow. We're talking with Mrs. B.
And they ended my case August 17th, and were scheduled to end my case again, and I didn't do anything, and they took them because of past history.
Marijuana or other drugs?
No drugs.
No drugs?
They
what kind of a bad girl have you been that I haven't even heard about?
Their dad. It was dad.
Bad dad. Yeah. And for breaking a window, you were saying, or for
yeah,
was he
and
convicted
because,
of it?
No, and not yet. And because no, the police wouldn't arrest him.
They just cited him.
They didn't cite him for anything to do with me.
And
they kept him for 5 hours for arguing with the landlord.
Wow. And this had to do with an eviction dispute, or
no? Just it's
some tenancy matter.
He could have evicted just one of us.
But he evicted both of you instead. He was upset about that.
Yeah, and I was upset about that. And not wanting my partner to move with me because I wasn't going to lose another place.
I hear
and
you.
He got upset and broke a window and they took the kids from me.
Because you were becoming homeless or they had some other claim?
Because I've had a child adopted out of CPS's care. I'm an automatic bypass under the criteria. Since there's already been a removal, they, under the law, are not required to give me a chance to get him back, and that's what they want to present to the judge.
And what yeah.
On Tuesday in Watsonville.
And how can people, if they want to be supportive, can they show up for the hearing, or would that be helpful?
I don't know yet.
Okay. But if... So you'll...
I'm trying...
No,
the lawyers are trying to get rid of her.
The judge. Is Morth, Heather Morth? No, Deneen
Guy.
Deneen Guy, yeah.
And her and I...
One of the, should we make...
She's tried to
most
say, this is the third time she's tried...
Ignorant judges on the bench.
This is the third time.
Oh, boy. Well, let me give you some information about Huff, which, and Huff in the past has done some help. Hi. Hey, David.
Hey.
We'll see, you know, not that we're any big experts at this. I'm down here at the meal in front of Borders.
And before we go into that... yeah, I didn't. I don't know what the outcome of Shannon Breeden's, also Mrs. B's, case was. She's a longtime activist in Santa Cruz and a prolific mom, and she's just, you know, a struggling poor mom, and she's had her problems with different kinds of substances, as far as I can see, as well. But she's got a big heart and a big voice, regular poetry reader, and she's been on the air a lot. I don't know what the outcome was with her kids. I think we're talking about last Tuesday that hearing was heard, and if I hear more, I'll pass on the word. More from the street here.
Hey, well, burritos and donuts and water. And Cosmic Chris with guitar in hand. You got a camping ticket, Chris?
I think it's trespassing or camping or something. Here, look at it.
Let's take a look at this. And this course is about 2:30 at...
That happened 9:30 this morning when I was rolling up my sleeping bag on the sidewalk.
And the 20th happened at 9:30.
Recording. All right.
But you got it. We're looking at your ticket here, which is hard to read. You put this down for a moment. Let's take a peek.
Boy.
What?
You have 9.60.060. I can't even read this sucker. So what did he tell you?
He said there's a no trespassing order on that spot.
And where was the spot?
Kitty corner from the red church at that little title company or whatever it is, insurance company or something. Next door to the dentist's office.
Did he ask you to leave?
I was already packing up. He goes, oh, you're on your way out of here, huh? And I said, yeah.
Well, it's not... It's,
well, because there's a no trespassing order here, I'm going to have to write you a ticket.
No, they have to inform you of that, and then you have to refuse to leave. Or it has to be visibly posted. Do you see anything posted?
I don't remember seeing anything posted.
Sure. Go back later and take a look, see what it looks like. If you have a camera, take a picture of it if you want to fight it. Welcome back to Santa Cruz. You have your guitar. Does this mean music is forthcoming?
Oh, yes, definitely. Free music.
Did you get a bite to eat? Is here in donut crunching?
Just a couple of bites of a donut, yeah.
Well,
don't forget to tip your local street musicians if they're working at all. At least if they're trying, you know.
Yeah, for sure. We've been talking with the donut-eating
Cosmic Chris.
Thank you, Chris. With his mouth full. And in the distance, we have Ricardo's music.
And Ricardo really played some great music at the Sunday Rene Curry very meager affair, although it wasn't meager in terms of human contact. She stayed there for several hours, but she didn't have a lot of clothing to give out. She did have a lot of donuts, so everybody's going to have lots of dental activity going on, or actually not going on, because nobody can afford a dentist. But every Sunday, 2 o'clock in front of Borders, Rene Curry gives out burritos, beanies if she has them, coats and blankets and sleeping bags if she has those, which she went on the air last Sunday to state she doesn't have, and she was putting out an appeal for more, particularly as the weather really got really cold last week. Now, let's see if we've got some maybe time for one of our musical breaks. How about a musical break? That sounds good to me. Let's do it.
Dr. Jones is driving to see the governor, he's smiling all the way. The thrill of healing the high and mighty might fade if the governor didn't pay. But he gets all the care he needs, it comes free with his job. For such fine doctoring, the rest of us better go out looking for a bank to rob. An ambulance when I need one, give me something for my pain. Tell the government to pay the hospital, I'll be back on my feet again. Mary's job once gave her insurance benefits, Blue Cross, Blue Tooth, Blue Hair. Her job is gone with its health protection, she can't buy insurance now, and that's not fair. They all say the answer comes back no. With two bad toothaches in just 3 years' time, Mary isn't welcome in their HMO. Send me an ambulance when I need one. Give me something for my pain. Tell the government to pay the hospital. I'll be back on my feet again. Must plan for a balanced budget, the president says so. It would be ideal if we all had health care, but bankers and generals are short on dough. So think positive, you'll get well soon. Try sunflower seeds. Don't breathe the air or drink the water, and maybe you won't have any health care needs. Send me an ambulance when I need one. Give me something for my pain. Tell the government to pay the hospital. little, I'll be back on my feet again. Tell the government we all need health care. We'll stand tall on our feet again.
Ah, dear. Mickey Mouse has invaded the studio. Stay tuned.
Dr. Ruth on the street. What's your street name, Ruth?
Shelley.
And Shelley, it is, of course, November 30th, 2010, and it's about 11:15 in front of the Coffee Roasting Company. Overcast day on Pacific Avenue, and a lot of noisy vehicles, or at least one, rolling out. Oh, that's the recycling van. So, Shelley, you're...
I'm thinking women dosed and the men naked for a theme for a wedding on the beach.
I like it. Are you planning to get married or as a friend of yours?
Yes.
Who are you going to do this foolish act with?
This man right here.
Well, are you still being polyamorous? Do I still get a chance to jump your bones?
I don't know. You're going to have to ask him on that one.
What do you mean? Have to check it with somebody else? You're
not
the human. All right. Well, I guess we could check it with him. But, I mean, I don't know. It sounds like... This sounds
are
like
we poly? We're not poly.
They're not poly. You're not polyamorous.
Not poly.
No, no. When is the wedding going to happen?
Before the end of the year.
And are you going to... Is it kind of a public affair or...
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the unlucky or lucky groom?
It's me.
And what is your name, me?
Lucky groom.
Let's sign in for free radio. What is your moniker?
Mine? Russell.
Oh, she got it.
So, are you previously a married man, or is this your first time?
My first.
And you look like you've been around the world a bit.
I have.
And you've decided finally to hook yourself up legally to the evil Shelley?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I got no reason to say no, except I don't believe in marriage myself much. But it's a matter of personal choice. What's that?
Pimp, hoes, and sluts. Kind of.
And you're getting married. Are you going to do this before or after you get married?
Both.
Well, I appreciate the sexual liberation content, but although pimps and hoes are generally a commercial enterprise rather than an enterprise of ecstasy. Now, you know what I mean.
Did you say that?
I did. But let me turn to more mundane matters. How about our friends, the police? Anything happening around them?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're kind of useless and definitely wasting taxpayers' dollars. But yeah, we should really talk about the people down there, Emmeline, who is supposed to be helping the homeless.
No one here, but you mean...
I'm pushing my elbow out of the doorway because I had a bicycle in the building because it didn't have a lock on it.
This happened
2 weeks ago, and the woman pushed me out of the doorway, and I said, bitch, you just fucking overstepped your ethics and boundary. You just shoved my elbow out the fucking door, bitch.
And when, I should say, who was this person?
I don't know her name, but she was some Mexican bitch and the security guard, and they were going to call the cops on me for going off verbally. And I said, bitch, I should call your fucking supervisor and fucking have you fired for touching me.
Or at least
I am
reported.
Bipolar post-traumatic stress disorder. Who the fuck are you to touch me? And then I got kicked out and I didn't get my food stamps on because she was wrong and I couldn't have the bike in the building because of the code of the fucking security guard, the fucking handbook.
Now,
are you kidding me?
Did you go back to get your food stamps?
I cannot leave a bicycle unlocked in Tweaker Nation. It just doesn't work that way.
It blocks the entranceway, sweetheart. We don't want your bicycles around. Buy yourself a bicycle space.
Two fat asses to walk through that corridor that day. I made sure of that.
Yeah, but we can't really trust you. I mean, after all, you are bipolar.
I'm homeless.
And you're homeless. Well, I didn't want to talk to you. Sorry. Next person.
Stereotypical fucking douchebag and keep her fucking food stamps shoving in her ass. And this is why your budget's way over deficit. Because of people like that who work in this office.
You never got the food stamps.
No, I haven't gotten food stamps. I have to beg people for quarters just so I can get a burrito. Taco Bell.
How is the panhandling coming along?
I hate panhandling.
I hear you. But how is it going?
I don't panhandle. I usually just... do what I gotta do and make money.
I see.
And I'm not saying that because I could get into it.
We aren't gonna get into the details, but perhaps after you're married, we can, or when you put out your book on this whole situation.
Oh, fuck yeah, I can't wait to write that novel.
Well, you know, it's.
Eventually, I will be that millionaire. I can slap that bitch in the forehead.
So you're still feeling the psychic force, not to mention
okay.
the tummy
I don't
force.
I think that's okay for somebody who's working with the public to be that shallow. I had 3 pages left to sign. I said, can I at least sign them and get the bike outside? She wasn't trying to cooperate or hear me or nothing. She wasn't trying to go with any. No, you have to take the bicycle out right now. I'm like, wow. Like that bicycle was there for the last 20 minutes. I didn't know it was that bad of a fucking...
Now, the reason you didn't want to take it outside was because...
It didn't have a chain or a lock on it. And on my M-line, where like 90 million tweakers, methamphetamine heads, live and steal things regularly on a regular basis.
You were concerned it might be taken.
Yes, because it wasn't my bicycle. It was my friend Russell's bicycle. And I wasn't trying to
your
have...
Your friend him. And fiancé, Russell.
My best friend, Russell.
Now, are you, have you previously been married?
No, thank Christ.
So what is this foolishness, the two of you getting married now? Is this for tax purposes? What's going on?
Tax purposes? What's that?
You know, all the income you're making.
I don't do taxes.
So,
be nice to the milkman. Thank you.
Any other reports from the street that we should know about?
Avoid MRI and make sure you get all your paperwork in hand, because those people fucked up.
We've been talking with?
Shelly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Shelly. And let us know when the wedding happens. I will personally wear black.
Yes, there you go. Black is a good color.
Yes,
black
indeed.
With shiny, sparkly things.
Hey, Robert, you were arrested twice a couple weeks ago.
You were arrested twice. Who are we talking with?
Me.
And me, what happened that got you arrested twice?
Second time, I was drunk in public, so I deserved it.
You were drunk in a way that you could not take care of yourself?
Well, drunk enough, I don't remember being arrested.
Ah, so you had sort of a blackout
for
them?
They were saving me.
They saved you from yourself. So the first arrest actually was a form of perhaps service to you?
I sat on a bench with my morning paper and my backpack. And
I should say the second arrest was a drunk. The first one was.
The second one was a drunk. Yeah. First one was I was sitting one morning on a bench reading my newspaper, and it's easier for me to lay it out in front of me, so I sat on the ground right in front of the bench.
That's an illegal. Within, I guess it's 10 feet of a bench.
When did it become
14
benches?
Feet of a bench.
And why is it an
hey,
issue?
Take care and have a good
Bye.
Wedding as best you can.
He could have just come and said, don't sit on the ground right there.
And who but was this who gave you the citation?
I remember. He's
cop.
Really young.
About what time?
9:59.
And
in the morning. And 2 Mondays ago, I think.
And where did this happen?
Downtown.
Remember the what store was?
It right in front of the coffee cart.
And did the coffee cart people, were they complaining?
No, I was quietly sitting there.
Had you purchased a coffee?
From here.
From another place. Aha! A patron. Well.
But I wasn't sitting at a business bench. I was sitting on the public bench.
Public
I was
is
not going to
the
sit
right
over an hour,
kind of
but
public.
I needed to spread out my newspaper, which, come on, that makes sense.
Yeah.
There we
yeah.
go.
Chiming
in. Passerby.
Ego. Anyway, so, I'm really a giant black man.
So you have a ticket or you were taken into custody?
He asked for my ID first and foremost, and he's like, do you have ID? Can I have it? I said no.
All right.
And like, what's your name? And I
was on record anyway.
Like,
we know who you are.
He's like, what's your last name? And I hesitate and I go, Smith. And the most like duh, like I was like, obviously it's not. And then I still wouldn't give him my last name when he tried to write me the ticket because
because you felt the ticket was unjustified.
Actually,
you could have just said, can you not sit there? Because I knew all the other things. I didn't realize a bench was on the list.
Since January, or actually March of 2009, sitting near a bench, phone booth, building, sculpture, kiosk, artwork, and some numerous other items has become a cause for citation and, if necessary, arrest.
Yeah, I'm pissed. I am guilty.
Now, it should be said that this is a case going to court. I believe our victim here, or our criminal, is being charged with, I think, obstructing an officer or resisting arrest. And frankly, I'm not interested in assisting any prosecutions in this regard. So the blank spots you hear on the tape are actually possible points at which statements are made that don't necessarily incriminate this person, but I don't want to take any chances in allowing that to happen. And therefore, in a way, I'm compromising my journalistic integrity.
You're censoring.
Here. I am selectively censoring certain aspects of this testimony. Let's put it this way, delaying it until the post-operative or post-courtative stage.
Protecting the innocent.
Protecting the innocent, actually, is what's going on here. Thank you so much, Dennis. Dennis, as you may have noticed, for all of you sharp-eared listeners, hey, it looks like no, that's the microphone I'm talking.
Microphone,
right?
Out.
But the actual the tapes you've been hearing have been sort of
one-sided,
bleeding in and out. It's not just because of my selectiveness. I'm not usually very selective. I usually tell people, you know, if you're going to court and you're talking on my tape, you're going to get played. So don't talk if you don't want the stuff played and recorded. But I occasionally make exceptions to that. I wasn't given any sexual favors for the exceptions. I want that to be made clear. And, in fact, it was simply a choice. But it sounds to me like here's an individual who you should be able to tell a police officer you think they're wrong. You should be able to question what they're doing without getting penalized by getting a ticket. That's not the American way. Or actually, that is the American way, but that shouldn't be the American way. So let's hear a little more of this, and then we will segue into From the Cream to the Dregs. Truly from the cream. Bathroom Spears Broadsides. To the dregs, Uncle Dennis.
Of just being a smartass. That's really all I'm guilty of. If he wants to know, I'll tell him what happened and be like, look, I am definitely guilty of being a smartass.
So you were held in jail?
Yeah.
For how long?
I can't remember. No, that time it was only 3 hours. I didn't even go into a holding cell. It was 4 hours.
Remember the name of the officer?
I don't. I can picture him in my head right now.
If you see him again.
He looks like he's like 22, rosy cheek kind of. I don't know.
He's just doing his job, sweetheart. Don't blame it on him. Blame it on the city council. Blame it on God.
I blame it on the bullies that picked on him in high school.
Well, that's possible. But now, have you gone to court yet on this case?
Not till the 16th of next month.
All right, well.
And I actually finally decided that I am going to court this time.
Okay, so you have a public defender.
No.
Well, you. This is it. What were you charged with?
Resisting arrest and falsifying information to an officer, which I have no idea the seriousness of any of that.
It's two misdemeanors punishable by a year or 2 years in jail at maximum and a $2,000 fine.
Well, they're not going to get my money. I don't have any.
So
they're wasting time.
Have you been arraigned?
No, that's the 16th. They let me out with a court date to show back up on the 16th.
You'll get a public defender at some point. I don't want you to feel you have to make any statements on tape, which I'll be playing on the radio, which are which might be construed by some to be incriminating.
We've actually said that before, and I'm now going into a 30-second overtime here, and Uncle Dennis is. As you know, he's
$100 a minute.
His eager listeners are, you know, champing at the bit to hear the latest 1960s tunes. So I'm going to kind of sign off, and we'll maybe pick it up on Sunday if you want to come back, or if you want to check out the Human Rights Fair on Saturday, come on down, and we'll see you there around noon at that joint across from the next to the Riverside. Theater. What is it called, Dennis? It's right across from Mobu Sushi.
The Galleria.
The Galleria. Boy, half the time I can't. The phrase will not stay in my mind. My mind is turning to Swiss cheese. Hence, it's time for me to withdraw and have a nice, tasty meal. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Hope to talk to you and with you again. And let's do it.
There's a sign on the wall.
but she wants to be sure. 'Cause you know sometimes words have to mean. In a tree by the brook, there's a song.